the retail world has been making some big shifts slowly for a while now. Department stores closing, malls struggling, e-commerce on the rise, and big businesses like Amazon and Walmart drawing more and more sales. Our next guest says that COVID-19 has done for retail what it's done for many things, sped up already existing trends and accelerated big changes to the way we shop and the cities and towns we live in. Derek Thompson is a staff writer at The Atlantic, where he writes about economics, technology, and the media. He's the author of the book Hitmakers and the host of the podcast Crazy Genius. He wrote the piece, The Pandemic Will Change American Retail Forever. Derek, welcome back to Central Time.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Well, let's look at right now for a moment before we look out to the future. We know there's been a big slowdown in the economy. You went out looking at businesses and talking to people. What is our current state of affairs when it comes to how we shop?
Well, the current state of affairs is that a lot of businesses that would otherwise be open are forcibly shut, and they will remain closed even as the economy slowly reopens, because if it reopens, it'll be reopening under a new protocol of socially distanced life. So, you know, crowded bars, crowded stadiums, crowded restaurants, crowded stores, all these things are going to be either impossible by local or state law or extremely unadvisable by public health. If you look at the way that Americans are spending their money, you do already see some really interesting shifts. So, for example, you see a huge increase at grocery stores and liquor stores, which in March had their best month of growth on record, according to official government reports. On the other hand, you look at something like travel spending, airlines, hotels, cruises, all of those are down more than 100% if you include refunds. Department stores, clothing stores, restaurants, those are all down close to 60, 70%, which is, you know, truly depression territory. So you do see some pockets of resiliency, but for the most part, Americans are, they're holding back. They're staying home. And as a result, they're just not spending money on what they used to.
We've seen a rise in the amount of online shopping over the years. And people are probably looking to that more now that they can actually go to a lot of the stores they might be used to. Do you think this is going to create a new habit of online shopping for people who maybe hadn't done it that much previously?
I think that's a good way of putting it for those who hadn't been doing it previously, because I think there's a certain swath of Americans who had been doing quite a lot of shopping online that did not need a global plague to get them to shop online. That said, I don't think that online shopping is a part of the sort of national infrastructure for older Americans, and that has clearly shifted. You've seen grocery deliveries, for example, ordered online just absolutely soar. One statistic that I think really encapsulates what's going on is the share of total retail spending that's happening online. So right now it's about, 14-15%, and that number has been growing by about 1 point every single year. So 13-15 every single year. Right now you have reports suggesting that 25% of all retail spending is going online, and that it will remain at around 25% for the next year or so. That effectively means that the e-commerce revolution has concentrated one decade's worth of growth in a matter of months. That's what I mean when I talk about the big acceleration. You see a lot of trends not necessarily being invented by the pandemic, but clearly and massively accelerated by it.
Another trend that had been out there, it's no secret, it can be tough to keep a small business afloat. We see industry consolidation in lots of different markets, including retail. How is that playing out now in the pandemic, small versus big?
Well, I think the big are likely to get bigger for several reasons. First, they have more resources to hold their breath over the next few months, the next few quarters. You know, you look at a restaurant, typical restaurant maybe has enough money to get itself through, 3 weeks without any income. For a chain like Ruth's Chris Steakhouse or Chipotle, they have $100 million or hundreds of millions of dollars of cash on hand that they can, burn through a little bit to weather the storm. Those are pre-existing strengths, but I think they'll redouble in the crisis because these companies, larger companies, will have more access to liquidity. They have deeper relationships with banks. They have more resources to change their establishments, put temperature checks at the front, put extra Lysol wipes and extra hand sanitizers within the establishment, break up some some of the tables and socially distance the tables. So for a variety of reasons, I'm talking about restaurants right here, but I think you'll see it across the economy. I do think the big will get bigger because they had more resources entering the crisis, and they'll be able to spend those resources down as the crisis continues.
And here we are with these small business assistance programs through the CARES Act from Congress, and now a follow-up onto that. And a lot of the aid going to, you know, businesses like the ones you mentioned, Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, businesses that I think when most people think small, it's not what they're thinking about.
Yeah, it's not what they're thinking about. And, you know, I don't begrudge any company trying to save itself during a plague. I don't want to, you know, name names and do a blame game with individual companies. I think it falls to the government to create a program that's big enough to save all American businesses, regardless of their size. You know, people who work for Chipotle are people, too. You know, they deserve a program that saves their jobs as much as a mom and pop store deserves a program that saves theirs. Now, clearly the way that PPP has played out, at least in the last few weeks, has made it tougher for small businesses to be saved, made it easier for larger businesses with pre-existing relationships with banks to be saved. I definitely am not rooting for that outcome, but I would hope that the government goes back and creates a really, really big follow-up program for this country, because I want to save all the businesses, not just the big ones and not just the small ones. In one way, a metaphor that came to mind as I was thinking about the problems with the PPP program, with the payroll protection program, is it's kind of like it's like a bread line. It's like a city creating a bread line that can only feed a third of its residents. Well, let's say that some residents who are rich got bread and some residents who are poor didn't get bread. I don't think that's the fault of the rich residents or the poor residents. I think it's the fault of the city that created a bread line that could only feed one third of its residents. We need to be able to feed all of our businesses, save all of our businesses. Otherwise, it's not just a matter of some businesses, you know, going bankrupt and others not. You're just going to see millions of people lose their jobs. And that's something I don't want to see.
Talking to Derek Thompson from The Atlantic about the future of retail, how it's being affected by the pandemic. You can join in, by the way, at 800-642-1234. If you're a shopper, how has this changed the way you shop? If you're a business owner, how is this affecting your retail business? 800-642-1234. Another trend we've talked a lot about on the show here, Derek, over the years, big retailers, the Sears's and JCPenney's and things like that, on the verge, facing trouble long term. How is this hitting them now?
Yeah, so I definitely want to distinguish the point I'm about to make from the point that I just made. I just said that the big are going to get bigger, and that's true for the big in parts of retail that are resilient. So Amazon will get bigger, Walmart will get bigger, Costco, I believe, will get bigger. Chain restaurants, I think, will expand. But there is a category within retail that has a lot of big players that is not going to make it, I don't think, through this crisis, and that is the department store. I do think that the year 2020 will, in many respects, at least from the history books, mark the death of that 200-year-old innovation known as the department store. You have Neiman Marcus looking to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Macy's has furloughed 100,000 workers. Sears has been on death's door for years. Same goes for JCPenney. I think that these department stores that don't offer the same choice, the same variety, especially the same kind of food options, a place like Walmart or Costco, I think they're going to find that more Americans make the determination, especially during a period of lockdown, that Amazon is just a better department store. And the internet is just a better department store than a physical department store. So I think that for a lot of those stores that were already facing a difficult decade in the 2020s, I think their end will be accelerated, just as the growth of some other big companies will be accelerated as well.
At the core of all this, Derek, you are concerned that we're going to see big changes in our downtowns, whether that's a downtown big city, a downtown commercial district of a smaller town, and all points in between. What do you worry about? What do you hope for?
Well, I'll talk about what I worry about first. I was born in the D.C. area. I went to school in the Chicago area, and I lived in New York for 7 years before moving back to Washington, D.C. So I spent basically my entire life in cities or in suburbs very close to cities. And what I love about cities is their density, their variety, their diversity. the diversity of people, of languages, of cuisines, and the energy, the thrum of cities. And I think that a plague, a pandemic, unwinds a lot of that. It makes density dangerous. Right now, we're seeing immigration, the administration trying to shut down immigration to this country. And we see global migration being effectively shut down by lockdowns going on around the world. I worry about the future of mom and pops in cities that are responsible for giving neighborhoods their unique face. Because without those independent stores, every store is a chain. And if every store is a chain in cities, that means that everywhere you go looks like everywhere that you've been. And, you know, it means that West Hollywood and the West End and Upper West Side aren't as distinct as they once used to be. So I'm afraid that the pandemic will be bad for all of those reasons. At the same time, I do think that if the pandemic is a shock to cities as they exist, and if more people leave cities and fewer people arrive in them, then one inevitable thing that will happen is that cities will get cheaper. And if cities get cheaper, then that means that the middle class that couldn't afford urban residence in the last few years, they can move back in. And maybe we can see not only the middle class immigrants, some artists and countercultural people and, the weirdos and eccentrics that have given cities their life and their history. Maybe they can move back into cities and make them interesting in the long run. So I'm looking at this short-term future, which I think is quite grim, and this longer-term future, which I think is a little bit rosier.
We pick up our conversation with Derek Thompson, staff writer at The Atlantic, where he writes about economics, technology, and the media. We're talking about the future of retail, heavily disrupted by the coronavirus pandemic right now. You can join in at 800-642-1234. How has all of this changed the way you buy stuff, groceries, clothes, whatever? Do you think this is going to be a long-term change? If you started buying online, are you going to keep doing it? Have you made an effort to support smaller businesses or bigger businesses in your area if you work in retail? How has this changed your life right now? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll go to your calls now. Dan is with us in Mosinee. Dan, hello.
Hello there. I agree to a point with your guest, but I still think that when it comes to some things, people are still going to want to go to a store. I have a hard time believing you can buy everything you want online, especially even clothes. I mean, people want to try clothes on for sizing, and I don't believe the pandemic's going to last forever. I mean, there will be a cure eventually. Doesn't mean we won't have another one, but how are people going to shop for clothes strictly online if they want to go and try things on? That's the question, I guess, for your guest. And I'll take the answer off here. Thank you.
Dan, thanks a lot for the call. Derek, some people want that in-person experience and they want to try their stuff on for sure.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's a great point. And I guess I want to make a specific answer to the question and a more general point. Also, I'll first answer specifically. When it comes to apparel, there's lots of ways to shop online. The vast majority of my friends do the vast majority of their clothes shopping online. They'll buy clothes, or they'll buy sort of subscriptions to box companies that will essentially take their measurements and send them a bunch of clothes that they can essentially send back the clothes they don't like, and the sending back is free. There's a lot of free returns across the clothing industry, which is one thing that has made it harder for a lot of operators to stay in the physical store business. So you already have this sort of mixing of online and offline shopping that's happening with clothes for a lot of young people. And I do think that because a lot of cities and areas are going to remain shut down for a while and people still want to buy new clothes potentially, older people might experiment with some of those free returns policies and sort of box subscription companies to shop for themselves. To the larger point, which I think is about, am I predicting the end of physical store retail? Absolutely not. I'm not predicting the end of physical store retail. I believe that this crisis will have an end, and B, believe that even before it ends, people will go back to stores. But the stores that we go back to won't be the same kind of stores. They will be stores that will be socially distanced, not only by local law, but also by consumer interest. I don't want to be in a crowded restaurant right now. I don't want to be in a crowded Apple store. I don't want to be in a crowded Target or J.Crew. And as a result, I think a lot of people share my position here. And as a result, these stores are just going to be less crowded. So how do you have How do you do the same amount of business if you don't have the same number, if you don't have the same crowds that you used to in your store? Well, almost by definition, that means more of your business has to be distributed. It has to happen outside of your store. And that means it's going to happen online. So I think that the online-offline mix that is already, it's already a fact of life for the vast majority of shoppers who do a little bit of researching online, and then maybe they buy in store, or they, you know, buy online and they, you know, return in store. I just think that that mix is going to shift a little bit more toward e-commerce because of the lockdown that we're all experiencing.
Dan, thanks a lot for that call. We'll go to Anita now in Lindenhurst. Anita, hello.
Hi. This is really interesting because I'm kind of going through, a real change here. It's a cultural change, a lot of our friends think. But one of the industries that has grown out of this, not just want to look at things and how they, the things that are already here are affected, but the new things coming in. And I'm being very careful because I'm a senior citizen, and I'm employing these various shopping and delivery services like Shipt and Instacart. And I'm finding out there's a world of difference, but they wouldn't be doing the business that they're doing were it not for the necessity right now. And for instance, like Instacart, you think these are just local yokels. They're not. That is a couple of $1 billion a year industry based out of San Francisco. Shipt is smaller, but the one thing about Instacart is you can't get through to them. They have a wall around them. If you've got something to say or you're not happy, forget it. The other one, Shipt, they're fantastic. And the thing is that, you know, even that is another way of shopping. But this has brought about some new businesses. So a lot of those housewives and even guys and college students that lost their jobs, they're doing this now.
Anita, thanks a lot for the call. A shift to businesses like Shipt and Instacart and others. And Anita is tapping into that world she didn't know was out there for the first time, Derek.
Yeah. Anita is, it's almost as if I placed her there because she's making exactly the point that I was trying to make, which is that, you know, Instacart existed and Shipt existed. And a lot of these e-commerce options and delivery options existed. But their modal consumer before the pandemic was a younger person. It was someone living in a downtown area who's in their 20s or 30s, who has this extremely comfortable relationship with making all of these orders on the internet. But today what you're seeing, I think, and I think there's many Anitas out there, you see older people, you see senior citizens picking up on this. And recognizing, wait, you know, delivery groceries can work, and delivery food maybe can work, and an all delivery economy, or maybe a mostly delivery economy can work for me. It isn't a huge interruption to my life, and in fact, it might even make parts of my life more convenient. This is what I'm talking about, not the zeroing out of the physical retail sector, not the end of visiting stores, but an important and potentially semi-permanent shift toward e-commerce among people who previously didn't realize how much they could do on the internet.
Anita, thanks for that call. We're talking to Derek Thompson from The Atlantic about the present and future of retail during the COVID-19 outbreak. Sean joins us now in La Crosse. Sean, hello.
I appreciate your guest very much. In fact, I might get a subscription to The Atlantic. They have a lot of good content coming out. It's odd to think of the Mall of America being someday like a museum where you see these stores that are nowhere else in the economy. I think the one possible survivor could be a store that is actually Wisconsin born and bred, and that would be Kohl's. One of the reasons that I think that is they got ahead of the online internet economy and did start a fairly robust online presence. Online pickup at store. They started actually handling Amazon returns. And so I don't think you're ever going to ever get rid of instant gratification and the shopping experience. I mean, the fact that we have to wait even a day now, even for an Amazon purchase, people are going to want to go to a shopping store, a department store, and have that experience.
Sean, thanks a lot for the call. Derek, kind of the hybrid, the brick and mortar that has a various kinds of online presence.
Yeah, you know, that description of Kohl's reminded me. I spoke to one source who's a lecturer at Harvard and a retail consultant for retailers all over the world. And I said, you know, give me some really interesting examples of some companies in other countries that are a vision of what the future of an American retailer could be. And he said, I want to tell you about a Chinese supermarket chain called Hema. And Hema is operated by Alibaba, which is an e-commerce giant in China. It's a little bit like their Amazon. So Hema, it essentially triples as a high-end grocer, a restaurant, and an online fulfillment center. So what that means is that if you walk into a Hema, it looks like a Kroger or a Whole Foods. It looks like a grocer. But you buy everything with your phone, you scan the item with your phone, you know, the Brussels sprouts, the oranges, the mushrooms, you scan the item with your phone before you put it into your cart. And so the checkout is partially automated in that way. There's a restaurant there. Again, you pay entirely through your phone. But really importantly, 60% of their orders are online. Those people don't walk into the grocer. Maybe that's a direction that America's supermarkets could go into.
Derek, always good to talk to you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Derek Thompson with The Atlantic, looking at the future of retail.